Hey, After Buzzers, before we move on to your next topic, we just want to say thanks to our sponsor, Anchor. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free. Plus, there are creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. Also, Anchor will distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more. Plus, you can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership, and it's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to Anchor FM to get started.
After Buzzers, welcome to a very special edition of Spotlight On Series. Today in studio, we have one of the stars of Narcos and his new film, Operation Finale, live. We're talking to him right now, actor Pepe Rapazote. Stay tuned.
You're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
Yeah, we're going crazy. And this is about to get crazy. We chose that song because you were talking about it.
Well, I've been a huge fan from of Prince since forever, since I was probably nine, and that was 79 probably. And so it's crazy. And this morning I was listening to the song inside my core, and I said, this final guitar solo is absolutely crazy. He was a genius.
A genius. And I might say that sometimes you feel like your acting is a genius. By the way, this is the Spotlight On series here at AfterBuzz. Welcome in. I am Michael Rippey. I'm your host. And of course, this is the actor, Pepe Rapazote.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being here.
Okay,
this is awesome, man. I'm excited.
It's an honor.
I gotta say, I'm excited to talk about Operation Finale, but I watched Narcos aggressively, and then when I found out you were coming, I was like, this is amazing. But we'll get to Narcos. Let's start with, you've got a new film out. It's coming out next week.
Yeah, the name is Operation Finale. It's an MGM movie. It stars Sir Ben Kingsley and Oscar Isaac, among others, in... Well, it's about the story. There are no spoilers because this is historical. This is the final chapter of World War II. After World War II, when the Second World War was ending, a lot of German officers escaped from Germany, and they were very much welcome in Argentina. That's what happened with Adolf Eichmann, the commander of the SS, and the architect of the Final Solution. So it was, he didn't go to Nuremberg, he didn't take his own life, so he was the only of the big ones still out there somewhere. And besides, he was the architect of the Final Solution, the responsible for the killing of 6 million Jews, so it was a big deal. Suddenly they find out he is in Argentina, he's in Buenos Aires, so the story is about the Mossad, the first international big name Mossad operation worldwide, and it went great. They tried to retrieve him. They brought him back to Israel. They tried him, and they sentenced him to death. It was a pretty, you know, decent ending for the Holocaust 15 years later, so that's why it's so incredible.
And I've seen the trailer a few times. It's incredible. I want anybody that's watching, we're about to play it here, but you play Carlos Fulner.
Yes.
Right? And you are assisting Adolf Eichmann, right?
Well, it's a little bit more than that. He was a sleazy bastard. He was a captain of the SS during the Second World War. He was with intelligence. He traveled all around Europe. But he loved to make some money on his own. And so one day he stole some money from the SS, and he was kicked out of the SS. His skull ring was melted down, which was the biggest disgrace and the SS. But suddenly they brought him back because he was half Argentinian, half German. And in Argentina, there was Juan Domingo Perón. He was a fascist, and he wanted all the German officers he could get when they found out that, hey, we're going to lose this war, so let's have him men. And this guy was called back to be the responsible for, you know, all the traveling, all the escaping, all the... So he was responsible for probably 3,500 German officers. People don't know the exact number because they went to Argentina. They all changed their names when they got there, so they wouldn't be identified.
I mean, incredible! You've been taking part in a bunch of theatrical commercial, different between Narcos and Operation Finale, roles that are based on nonfiction stories, true stories, and characters. One blurb I read about this new movie said that director Chris Weitz saved his most evil role for you. Would you agree?
Who said that?
I can't remember where. Uproxx, I think.
Yeah, it is. I do believe. I do believe that Rough Cut was 2:30 or something like that, or over 2 hours and a half.
Yeah.
They had to cut it down half an hour. So there are some scenes and some parts which are rough edited, but still, it's a great movie, amazing cast. Especially, I'm talking about Sir Ben Kingsley and Oscar Isaac, Peter Malkin, and Adolf Eichmann. The conversations you can listen to between Peter Malkin and Adolf Eichmann. Adolf Eichmann is trying to, as he did in real life, defend himself by saying, "I was just following orders. They asked me. I was an engineer. They asked me to kill as many people as I could, as cheap and as fast as I could. Could have been anything else. Could have been screws, rubber bands. We're talking about human beings, of course, but that's the morality of it. The conversations he's trying to defend himself. There's one convicted in totally 100%, 200% Nazi in this movie, and that's Carlos Fuldner. Because there was the idea, and there was, it's crazy if you think about it, there was the idea back then in the 50s to bring the Third Reich back alive in Argentina, since you had 3,500 of brilliant German minds there, all Nazis. Why not? And so it would be the Fourth Reich. Mm-hmm. Maybe one day we'll do some fiction about it. Because in 48, they already had an atomic bomb and a nuclear reactor in Argentina. All, that was all German. This guy is really a badass, a bad guy, a bad guy.
And I also read that you said somewhere that this is the final story of the Second World War.
Yes, that's why it's the final chapter on, of course, wounds like these will never heal. A thousand years could go by. Sure. But the second best thing is to wait for 15 years and try to find out where he is in the world. Mm-hmm. And suddenly, hey, he's in Buenos Aires. Let's gather a team of eight agents. And it was the first Mission Impossible, without Tom Cruise, but it was a Krav Maga guy, there was a doctor, there was a questioning guy, there was a communications guy, there was a logistics guy. Those were eight. There was no way they could get Adolf Eichmann out of a fascist country mm-hmm. that also hated Jews. And how are we going to do this? So the idea was to bring an airplane that didn't fly to Argentina. Why would it? Or Israel, Buenos Aires, Tel Aviv, Buenos Aires. But they come up with the idea of bringing a star over to Argentina to, give some autographs or mm-hmm. something like that. But El Al was a private company, and they needed the authorization, the consent of Adolf Eichmann to be taken back to Israel, which was absolutely stupid and impossible to do. Hey, do you want to go to die to Israel? Do you? Of course you do. Come on, sign that paper. The amazing thing is the airplane gets held back for a week somewhere, and that they have to go to a safe house. And that's during that week, the conversations between Peter Malkin and Adolf Eichmann that convince Adolf Eichmann to sign the paper and say, I can promise you, you can say whatever truth you have in court worldwide, it's going to be broadcasted. And it was. So you can say whatever you want to. He got convicted, just the same, but it's amazing to have someone who can, convince you to enter a plane, at least convince you to sign the paper, because afterwards it wasn't quite like that. He had to be drugged to be taken to the plane and back to Israel. But at one point, he signed the paper. That's all Al needed. Then they could drug him and take him back by force, of course. But it's an amazing story.
It's been testing so well. They pushed up the release date from September up to end of August.
Which is crazy because the way it's shot, it's not that heavy. It's a heavy matter. Of course, we're talking about Adolf Eichmann. But the way it's shot and the story, and it has a little comedy and comic reliefs, and the Israelis, the actors were amazing. The team, the Mossad team, were amazing. So it's pretty light if you try to not to think about what's at stake here, right?
So speaking of the film, were you shooting in Argentina the whole time?
Buenos Aires. Around, yes.
And how long was shooting?
That was 8 weeks, 9 weeks.
What's that like being on, being
in Argentina?
Well, not just in Argentina, but being on set in Argentina with a cast of very top level actors. And actresses.
Well, I would say the locations don't have much to do with it's great to have an amazing cast. It's great to shoot with Sir Ben Kingsley and to be Oscar Isaac, of course, and Melanie Laurent. Best thing is to we were in Buenos Aires, and Buenos Aires is still pretty well preserved. The British went there in the 19th century to build the second largest railroad in the world after the US, after the American, which is crazy. It was 36,000 kilometers long. You could go around the earth, the perimeter, the equator. So they built a lot of crazy things. Then the Germans came, and then the Italians. So it's and in the 19th century, there was a general who wiped out all the indigenous. So there are no Indians in Argentina. You have them, of course, the locals, just like here in the U.S. There was a slaughter down there. The only country in South America that really don't have any Indians is Argentina. They were all killed. So you have Germans, Italians, and British. So looking at you, you can look more Argentinian. Okay. You bet. So it's everyone's blonde and blue and green eyed and 6'5" and all that. But the good thing is, it's still so preserved. You have all the locations. You have all the 19th century things. You have all the second. You have all this 50s house. The neighborhoods built by the Brits for the engineers to build the railroads. It's everything's there. They didn't have. It was a lot cheaper, I guess, because they didn't have to build anything. It was all there, and that is the good thing about shooting such a movie. You're not in a studio. You're not in a studio with a facade and inside or whatever, or chrome or anything like that. Everything's for real. You add the 1950s American cars and the motorbikes, and you got it. It's crazy. Classic. It's magical, and it's for real.
It sounds magical.
Yeah.
So what goes into your thought process on your characters? You look for the character, you're prepping for the film or your role. What goes into that for you?
Well, there are a lot of things. Here in the U.S., we are you a method actor? People always ask that. Yes, I do have my method. Of course, that's not what they're asking.
It's the Pepe method.
But yes, we all have different methods and different processes and all that. So if you ask me about Stanislavski or Lee Strasberg or Stella Adler's or, the method as Stanislavski was teaching starts by how would I do it? Me, Pepe, mm-hmm. before going into character, because I don't have one. The thing is, and some characters, especially these ones, okay, I'm a cold-blooded killer. I'm a Nazi, and I'm all about Jewish extermination. How would I do it? Okay, I got stuck here. I would never do it. So the thought process has got to be totally different. You got to give one step ahead and say, hey, I'm going to draw a blank here, and I'm going to forget I even exist. I will just give my body and voice and feelings and emotions to this other guy. I will have to start in a different point of the process, right? So I'll have to give it for free that this guy was educated and upbrought by listening to. That's what happened in our Nazi Germany. Mm-hmm. Since the 20s, the Nazi Party saying, hey, the worst thing in the world, all the problems in the world would be solved if the Jews were dead. That's it. You have a common goal. You work for that. It could be something a lot prettier, right, and better. It could be something like everything would be solved if there was no war in the world. Okay, let's get around this goal. But no, it was the Jews. And so if you... It's so easy to think that if you're a kid and you listen to this, one day it will be true, you know? A lie told so many times becomes true one day. And that's what happens. And you can watch the speeches and Adolf Hitler's speeches on TV. So you can go crazy just by, you know?
The question is then, did you watch any of those speeches or did you research your specific character?
Because you're playing a character. I researched my character,
right, you're playing a character that's a real
character.
Person.
Yes, I researched my character.
How'd you do that?
There's a lot of things written about Carlos Fulner. Uh-huh. So he was this badass Nazi, but wise guy as well. Mm-hmm. He was trying to make a buck for himself, but he believed in Nazism. But he went back to Argentina. He created this company called Capri. It was a temporary job agency. Mm-hmm. So every German officer coming to Argentina, he would give them a job and keep a fee for their wages. Totally, such a comeback, right? To say, hey, you want to work? Okay, I got a job for you. I'm going to keep 20% of everything you make. Just like agents and managers in this business. Just kidding. And see, he went to become so rich that he even created the Fulner Bank. He had a bank, and he died in peace in 92 in Madrid, Spain. So some guys will go just, do anything and just escape whatever justice or divine justice. Well, divine justice, none of us will escape. But, this was the guy. So I do think that at some point this ideology, this crazy ideology, was just one more tool for him to make a buck. Hey, I feel comfortable here. So 3,500 German officers are here. I brought them back here. So this will be where I make my money for sure. So I don't know how much of him was more Nazi than he actually was or just a regular Nazi. I don't know what a regular Nazi is. But the thing is, in the movie, I have this very crazy... the speech full of hate, very Nazi. It was a little cut, edited, but it's powerful. It's in the beginning of the movie, and it sets the tone for who this guy is and what we're talking about. Let's not forget that in the end, although this is 15 years after World War II, people were still thinking about Nazism and well, it could be an option, especially in Argentina. And they were in charge. And this guy was in charge of some paramilitary forces, you know. I could call the police to work for me for a while. I had the fascist youth, the Taquaras. So it is somehow scary to think that, hey, this guy's running loose on the streets and he can do anything. Nothing will ever happen to him. Mm-hmm. They will protect him. So that's crazy. So this was the actual bad guy of the movie, at least out in the open, not like Adolf Eichmann, who was trying to...
playing the character.
Yes.
Easy to separate when you leave the character on set, you go home and you're totally out of it. Or you, speaking about your methods and stuff, I mean...
Okay, that's
you know. Like,
I listen to that a lot. I don't want to insult anyone, but if you bring the character home, you're not doing your job right. Okay. That's what I think. Okay, mm-hmm. You're gonna go crazy. You can do it. You're gonna go crazy, and there are some examples. But hey, you're gonna go crazy. You're not supposed to bring your character home. I wanted to do this short. which is a very simple one. Just me. This guy is on the passenger seat talking, hey, I don't want this to happen ever again, whatever. And you don't watch the driver. Suddenly, when they're getting home, we shoot the driver, and it's me too. So I'm bringing a character home. Then you get home, and there are 15 people more. It's all me. Yeah. And they're saying, shit, this is getting too tiny. I can't stand this, motherfucker. And we should change. And I got to call the real estate agent. I need to move. It's already 19 people in this house. We can't just puzzle. You know, it would be a short movie. And it's,
what's the title of your short movie?
I don't know. But this would be the story. If you do that, you're going to go crazy. Going to go crazy. I understand that. It's one thing. There are so on the other hand, there are characters that are so powerful and so difficult and hard. And we know some examples we are thinking about while I'm talking, or at least I'm doing it. There are so hard to perform, and one of them won an Oscar. But there are so very hard that sometimes you feel the temptation to go home and say, hey, my work's not done yet, while I'm rehearsing and trying to build the character. I don't feel safe enough, so I'm going to take some homework. I'm going to bring some homework and start bathing like that character, eating like the character, sleeping like the character, even if you're good, dreaming like the character, and at one point you're already gone to the other side, and it's going to be really hard to go back. But I do understand that, hey, I'm going to do the part of my life. You need to have that switch button next to you at all times.
Separation.
Just to break glass in case of emergencies. Just turn the switch off. So otherwise, you'll go crazy.
Sure, okay. It's interesting. I mean, I speak to a lot of different actors, producers, and directors about this, and it's interesting to hear people's how they feel about it. You guys had the premiere for the movie recently.
Uh-huh.
And will you watch your movies or your roles? Do you watch yourself, and then do you critique yourself, or you won't want to see yourself
I critique myself, and I almost obliterate myself when I'm watching one of my movies.
Toughest critic?
Yes. Absolutely. So sometimes if I can tell you all about the movie, I don't remember my scenes. I just want to – I don't close my eyes, but they get wiped out of my – I don't like to see me on
really?
The screen. Yes.
Is there a reason for that?
Toughest critic. I'm a perfectionist. Some say it's because I'm a Virgo, but it's crazy. First thought is I could have done better. So I'm never satisfied. So I hate to see myself. That's bullshit. You know that. No.
So knowing that about yourself, do you actually still watch this stuff, or will you kind of just not try to see yourself?
I do. No. I do have to watch myself, and I, of course, to be the toughest critic, I really have to watch it closely. That doesn't mean, and I like it. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. But I do watch it. I still watch it, and I watch my fellow actors, And then I watch the directing and the cinematography and all that. So I appreciate a lot of what's going on the other side. It's crazy. It's beautiful. I would be happy doing anything regarding the movies. I believe directing is the toughest part.
Why is that?
Because I used to be an architect many years ago. I worked as an architect. And, you really hate. You're the director. You're gathering everyone around you, and they will have to work with this common goal. And you're the only one with the whole vision of the project. And the architecture case will be the design of whatever, a building. You're the only one. You'll have civil engineers, mechanical engineers, whatever, constructors, and everyone. You will be the only one with the real final design. And sometimes it fails you, right? And much more even in the movies. Hey, I didn't think this... After editing, after a rough editing, you see, hey, this is not working as I thought it would. So you have to arrange some new strategies too. So it's really hard to... I do believe that being a director is very, very, very tough. I would. So that's as a tough critic of myself, it's really hard for me to think about directing because, hey, this is because of me, and I'm the only responsible for this shit. I'm sorry about the French.
One of the languages you speak. We'll get to that shortly. But speaking of being a former architect, I mean, you have a schooling in architecture.
Yes.
How does one go from being schooled in architecture to saying chance. You're going to create a new trade and go be an actor,
by
right?
By chance. I used to be an architect. I played music. And one day I tried some theater classes. And then I loved it. And I started doing some amateur theater plays. And one day, a Portuguese scriptwriter, very famous one, he's already deceased, he came for a premiere, and after the premiere, he told me, wait for a phone call. 2 weeks later, he called me, and I was in my first TV show, and I never stopped after that. And I had to think to myself, hey, do you want to be an architect, or this is crazy, right? Because the first year and a half or 2 years, I went to Italy and France and Spain, and wow, is it going to be like this? Yes, okay, let's leave the architecture aside and let's do this, because it was really a great adventure, and it still is.
And speaking of Italy and France, you speak five languages. Fluent in five languages?
No, not fluent.
Fluent in how many languages?
I would say four. L'italiano è un poco dimenticato. Non è facile. If you don't really
practice continuously.
Continuously, although I have an app, and once in a while, for a couple of weeks, I go back to my advanced classes in Italian, Babel. I'm not advertising to anything, but Babel, which is a cool name for a company that teaches languages, right? Babel. Worst thing that can happen is you speak a little bit of everything. You know, don't know what you're saying, but they're cool. It's cool. The truth is, 2 years ago, exactly 2 years ago, I was on vacation with my family in Rome and Venice. And as soon as we got to Rome, we entered a cab to lead us to take us to the hotel. And the cab driver asked me, "Sei di Napoli? Are you from Naples?" Yes, I still got it, because that used to be my main accent in Italian, which is a very lazy accent. It's a southern accent. The C's go to these. Le pizze sono ancora calde. You know, it's calde means hot. Galde. It's everything flows a lot easier, and you forget. It happens with, for instance, the Spanish accents in the Caribbean. And the Caribbean, the coast, it's all very much lazy, you know. You start forgetting letters and syllables, and sometimes you say, what did you say? You cut words in half, you don't see the plurals. It's crazy, but it's beautiful because it's much more melodic. If you don't respect that mother language, mother tongue so much, you end up playing music with your tongue. It's so that's how beautiful it is.
So for a second there, when you talked about getting into the cab in Rome, you brought back real nightmares for myself, because when I don't speak any other languages. I was in Rome and I was just trying to get anybody to understand anything I was saying, and getting into a cab and getting places. And here, you know, you can converse and get anywhere. And the five languages you speak: Portuguese, Spanish, French
Italian, English, and English. Yeah.
Italian.
Yeah.
What's the first one? You're born. I'm
Portuguese. Yes.
English right away when you're young as well, or
yes, along with Spanish probably. But although the first one was French after Portuguese, because my parents' generation, all the culture was, you know, the City of Lights. It was Paris. La chanson française, the French authors, the French history, the French '60s. The '60s in France were crazy in Europe. You know. After it was the British music scene with the Beatles and the Rolling Stones and all that. But I'm talking about culture, the writers, all the disruptive writers, the songs, the intervention, the political intervention songs in France. So that was all about. So that was my inheritance. That's why I had French first, which is great. Then I lived for 2 years in Venezuela, Caracas. And let's not forget that Portugal is right next to Spain. So everyone gets understood on both sides of the frontier if you speak slowly and you're not a stupid ass, which happens a lot with some Spanish people. I don't want to insult anyone, but
yeah, of course
I already
not.
Did. No, but it's true. Portuguese are very, very polite. Hey, let me just say this about Lisbon in Porto. Portugal is very hip right now, right? Very trendy and all that. And there's one top 10 list of CNN about safety, where are the safest places to travel on vacation. And Lisbon goes number 5 saying, but the Portuguese are too polite to be criminals. And I love that because it's true. On the other hand, if you go to Spain, Spanish are not polite. That's what I mean, okay? Mm-hmm. Usually Spanish are not polite. They don't care if you don't speak the language. You just learn it, okay? They're not, sorry, what did you just say? May I help you with something? No, they don't give a damn. That's it. So that's how Portuguese feel. It's quite the opposite, right? You go to Portugal and I don't speak a word of English, but we'll understand each other.
You spend most of your time in Lisbon? Is that where you have a home?
Yes, I pay taxes. I have a wife and 2 daughters. That's what I say. Yes, that's what I do in Portugal.
Okay.
But for the last 2 years, I mean, of course, I've worked a lot in Portugal, but for the last 2 years and something, that's how it's been. Yes.
Where have you been primarily over the last few years?
Well, if I'm not working in Portugal with family, but Colombia, Mexico, U.S., Argentina, Spain.
What do you think about the U.S. and Los Angeles specifically?
What do I think about the U.S.? I love the U.S. Well, since I was an architect, my kind of town would be Chicago.
Chicago?
One of my last studies when I was in college was about the after-fire architecture in Chicago. So Chicago is crazy. And I'm not only talking about all the Pritzker prizes that you can find there. It's amazing. It's like having the Oscars all there, right? Best actor, best actress, best whatever, best movie. And, you know, they're all there. But the thing is, the planning of the city in 1870-something, it's crazy. Just like Barcelona in 1870, Cerdà, he did this diagonal avenue in it's probably 120 yards wide, you know, in 1870. How many carriages and horses would you put on it's huge and it's really long. And you think to yourself, he crazy genius, this guy. One day he knew that. And so that's the only way that city can work, you know, is by having that diagonal. Crossing, going across town from one side to the other. But what do I think about LA? In terms of architecture, you don't have much, of course. You know, it's downtown. It's downtown, some cool places. And
as an architect, I mean, LA probably wasn't created best architecture in mind, right?
Yeah, that's the thing. Architecture was not a preoccupation of who started L.A. to 120 years ago. And this business, you know, the main business in L.A., it's exactly about sceneries. It's about studios. It's about, you know, and nothing lasts. And it's crazy if you put it into the city. You know, the spirit of someone who planned the city is, hey, this is one movie, then we'll tear it down and let's go to the next one. So the drywalls and all that, suddenly I look at these $5 million houses and I look at them and I say, hey, this looks like a dump. And people are paying $5 million for this. And 20 years from now, if they don't have if they don't care for the house, they won't have a house anymore. And that pretty, you know, because of the drywalls and wood and everything will come up, right? And that really, hey, you're buying a lot. You're not buying a house, you're buying but anyway, people are great here. Everyone tells me, hey, right, what about the weather? I don't care about the weather. I love the four seasons, and we have those in Portugal, and here it's always summer, and it drives me a little crazy. But yeah, the people is what makes the CD.
This is good.
What it is. And it's the most important thing.
Smart
so
man.
If I had to think, hey, first you get to know the LA people and you say, what kind of town do you think they live in? I wouldn't say this one. I would say a much prettier one. You know what I mean?
I do.
Because the people are a lot prettier than the city itself.
I also like that you didn't want to insult the people of LA here.
No, It's not that.
I want to talk to you about Narcos. Can we talk about that? Because
yes,
it's you know the parallels between playing you know characters that are real people. You know, extend from your new film, Operation Finale, into where you play, you know, a high-ranking member of the Cali cartel in Narcos Season 3, where you play, you know, Don Chepe.
Yeah.
And
thank you for the Don. I appreciate that. Otherwise, I'll kill you. Keep the Don, please.
So the question I really wanted to know is, did you watch Narcos before you joined the cast in Season 3?
Yes.
You're already into it. So
I was already into it because... the main star, Pablo Escobar, Wagner Moura, is a Brazilian actor, and we love him in Portugal. A lot of movies he did. Tropa de Elite, I don't know how you say that here. In the U.S., that's what turned him very famous internationally and all that. About a military police who goes into the favelas, killing the narcos there, which is a crazy, crazy job to have. I don't know, but they're probably working in, risking their lives every day for $600 a month. It's stupid, crazy. Who would do that? But some do believe there is a lot of corruption as well. Of course, you don't make $600, but some of them really do, and they join the force, not thinking about corruption, but ending trafficking and violence. So you risk your life every day for $600. And hey, you could say, hey, $600 is a lot in Brazil. No, it's not. It's not. It's you just live like a regular policeman back there, and you're really risking your life. That's crazy. That's crazy. That's. Hey, you gotta bow to that.
How was your experience filming Narcos and being part of that cast and coming in? Because I think, you know, Season 1 Narcos, it comes onto Netflix, and then by Season 2, I think it started to get a lot of notoriety, and people were expecting and waiting for Season 3, and then, you know, Season 3 is just as good as
And it comes out better than Season 1 and 2, right?
The best.
Right?
There's never been a better episode.
Thank you.
Specifically your episodes. No, but... But it truly an incredible you know series. What was it like being a part of the cast and you know filming kind of a mini series almost? You know,
yeah, it was. First of all, you got to think that you're away from home 7 months out of your homeland. All of us were
seven months,
and from the four Godfathers, one was Mexican, Damian Alcázar, Francisco Denis from Venezuela. Then a Portuguese guy, and then Pacho Herrera, Alberto Aman, who was born in Argentina and moved to Spain. So none was from Colombia, which is to some Colombian people a little, hey, couldn't you pick just one Colombian drug lord? Come on.
Sure.
We have so many good actors and all that. But it wasn't about that. And the thing is, so since it was – everyone from outside, we were very, very close, and we still are.
Really
we have
cartel.
A WhatsApp like a group, and we write every day, and yes, we're very good friends. Yesterday I was sending a message to Damian Alcázar. I want to invite him for a movie in Brazil, where he will play a Mexican in Miami. That has to do with one more of those violent stories in Rio, because hey, it's all about Rio has it all, you know. It has the highest rate of transsexuals and the world, because it has become so easy for the surgeries, and it's kind of affordable. So if you have to, it's you don't have to go through all that psychology thing and getting you ready to. No, I want to, and it's gonna be now. So you have a lot of free sexuality there, which is great. So it's hot. It's you got samba. You got beautiful girls. So it's very sexual, the environment. You have a lot of cocaine, weapons trafficking, a lot of money laundering, a lot of gambling, because casinos are forbidden, and you have what they call the jogo do bicho. It's the game of the animal. So you bet on the head of the rooster or the tail of the pig or whatever. And you, if you win the prize, and everyone can sell it on the streets. And it's the most honest thing in the world. You can, hey, you want to play Zook the Beast? Yes, give me one rooster head. And you buy it. If you win it, you can be sure that you go back there and the money is there waiting for you. And you've probably never seen that guy in your life. And he's still standing there instead of running away with your money. It's amazing. It's honor amongst thieves, you know.
So when you played, what were you gambling?
No, you're not gambling. Yeah. When I play?
Yeah,
when you play. I don't play, though. Yeah. I don't gamble. Yeah. But it's crazy. And this is a story about, because it's everything is mixed together, right? You have Zogu Bishu mixed with cocaine trafficking and weapons and sex slaves and all that. So, you know, it could be a good thing in between all these things, but no, it's not. It's not. Zogu Bishu, it's surrounded by crime, as everything else in that town, which is crazy.
So Narcos is a series.
Oh, sorry. Yes, I got
Operation Finale is a movie. You've done commercials. You've done TV. Do you have a preference?
Oh, acting. You know what
I mean? Just acting in any manner. Yes,
even commercials are amazing. Of course, the money is what drives us to commercials. But I love the fact that, because that's where my perfectionism comes out the most.
With commercials?
Yes, because you have, if you're telling a story and you have 45 seconds to tell that story, every frame will count.
Everything has to be on.
And as soon as you say cut, I think to myself, I had a millisecond there, I was disconnected. I want to do it again, you know? Even if the director is, I'm okay with it. Okay is not enough. It's got to be brilliant, you know? And so sometimes you have to repeat it and focus 10 times, 20 times, 30 times, which is crazy. And that is an exercise of focus, concentration like no other, because you have to repeat it many times in a row. But anyway, theater. The theater stage, the fact that you can have an audience right in front of you, listening to it, breathing,
live,
replying to you live. If it's silent, you're dead. You're already dead before you just want to, you just think to yourself, take me out of here. That's because you already lost it. And it's, so if you want to put it this way, it's a real time, thermometer, of your acting. If you're doing it wrong, you will know it right away. You didn't get it from the audience. So if we could somehow be shooting TV and the movies with an audience, just feel it breathe, it would be a reassurance of how good or bad we were, and if we had to do it again. That would be perfect to have this kind of breathing.
You know, here in the States, sometimes there are certain shows that they do live audience.
I know,
TV.
But most of them comedies or entertainment, comedy. Right?
And you're not
sitcoms.
I was going to ask you, you're not into comedies, are you? You're always into thrillers, drama, action.
No. I did a lot of comedies. Man. I do a lot of comedies, just not here. But I do a lot of comedies. I love comedy.
Okay,
I really love comedy, and there are some American. The British humor is. Britcom is amazing, and here in the U.S., you also have some crazy things. For instance, Modern Family is, for me, one of the best comedy shows in the world of all times, with an amazing cast, mm-hmm. with amazing scripts. It's crazy, but I do love comedies. But going back to, I don't know if you went, you finished Columbia already. I don't know. I was going back to Columbia. It was great to be able to run those streets, Bogota, Cali, and to get to know people who actually knew these guys, and to get the feedback from them saying, "Hey, you're doing it exactly how like he was." I was told that once or twice. Because this guy, he knew he was in power, and he had a great sense of humor. And he was the kind of guy who would stand up in a restaurant when he realized that someone was looking at him. He got recognized, and, okay, I'm going to go there.
We had a
couple. Are you looking at me?
I had a couple pictures of your character that I wanted to share with the audience, Steven, if you want to put those up. But yeah, I mean, you in Narcos for sure, you had the character where you were, you know, underneath you're dark, but you could give off light from the outside.
It's crazy. You can be, and it felt so right. I don't know. This is a little stupid to say, but it felt so right to be such a. To do such nasty things, that's why I think that it comes naturally probably for many gangsters and Nazis and whomever who kill people and do nasty things. If you love what you do, and he loved what he did. He was he had 7 semesters of chemical engineering, so he loved the cutting of the cocaine, the mixing, the adventure, the killing to you know, for self-preservation. Oh, this was an excitement, and people say he was really excited about this. And so why not do it with a smile? Because you're happy about what you're doing. Yeah, I'm killing one here and another one there. It's part of the business. A story goes that he had 3 families in New York. He lived in New York because there was an ether ban in Colombia, which is one of the most important parts of cutting cocaine. It's very important. It was an ether ban. He moved to New York, and so he was there for 15 years with a couple of dozen labs in Manhattan, and he had 3 families, one real wife, one actual wife. But one day, the story goes that he had a fight with his second wife. He killed her, and he brought home 2 little girls to his first wife and said, "Hey, bring them up as your own. They're yours."
Okay.
That's powerful, right?
That's wild.
That's pretty easy to end a discussion. Should be like that every day.
So we're going to wrap it up. No.
We're
going to wrap up shortly. No, that's wild. I have a question though. You got a blank canvas, right? It's your character. You're deciding your character, the show. What kind of character are you going to create for yourself? Blank canvas, totally up to you.
I love the monologues. I love theater, heavy theater monologues with a lot of cynicism.
Live studio,
yes,
live audience.
But when you're talking about a white canvas, I would create one of those. Right now, it would be a cynical. L.A. movie producer pretending he's more than he is, and he's really acid.
Well, we're in Hollywood. Hopefully they're listening. They can set that up for you.
Let's do it.
What's coming up next for you?
There's a lot of things going on. I'm pretty sure that 2019 will be a great year. There's a chance of going to Brazil, another one in Mexico, a couple of them here in the U.S. I still don't know, but... When this starts happening, that's how it goes here. It's crazy if you're not
momentum.
Used to. Is if you have a regular job, you know, hey, and 6 months from now, I'll have to go to Saudi Arabia because I have a business to sign there and all that. Here, everything can change in a week. But the thing is, I have probably 10 things running around my mind, including... Being the fact of the fact that I'm now a business partner of a pizza factory in Spain.
Okay.
Yes. So I could be designing pizza places 4 weeks from now. Who knows?
And your favorite
as an architect,
favorite type of pizza is?
I love most of them, but I would say margarita. The simple one, black olives on top. Okay. Give you that.
Barbecue chicken for me.
Okay.
Yeah, just so you know. Well, good luck with the pizza joints. Everyone can find you at
PepeRapazzotti.com or at PepeRapazzotti. It's all PepeRapazzotti.
And you got a lot of things going on. You're running around. People are going to want to stick around after they hear this interview. There's no doubt because you've insulted some of them and some not.
Don't say that. And no, please treat me as call me Don Chepe. Don Pepe, if you will.
This has been incredible. Thank you so much, Pepe, for stopping by the AfterBuzz Studios here in
Thank
Los Angeles.
Thank you, Michael.
The best of luck with not only Operation Finale, everything moving forward. I'm sure we'll see you again down the road. This has been another episode of Spotlight on Series here at AfterBuzz. Thanks so much for watching. I'm your host, Michael Rippey. We'll see you next time.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
AfterBuzz TV.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.